Welcome to Crash Concepts, where the economy, energy, and the environment are explored. Up next, fresh ideas and insights into the factors that are driving the world and shaping your future. Presenting information you can't afford to live without, here's Chris Martinson.
Welcome to this Peak Prosperity Podcast. I am your host, Chris Martinson, and it is August 30th, 2016. Today, we're going to talk about solutions. Not the trivial sorts of solutions like which insulation is best or how much gold to buy. Today, we're going to dive straight into the heart of why so many people are discontent and lack deep connections with each other and therefore resiliency. Now, in a recent podcast with Sebastian Junger, he noted that returning veterans were almost universally dissatisfied with re-entry into the very society they were sent overseas to protect. Some, so much so, that they commit suicide. The name of his book was Tribe, On Homecoming and Belonging. Where that book raised the need for something tribal in our lives, it left out the concrete steps towards getting there. Now, we know now, further, that the opposite of addiction is not sobriety, it's connection. Connection to others, but first and foremost, that begins with an authentic connection to self. Now, how do we connect deeply with each other in ways that can promote both inner and outer connections that will truly inspire and uplift us, make us happier today, and far more resilient for whatever tomorrow brings? Today's guests are true cultural pioneers and real-life practitioners of how to create and live in a tribal setting. No, not in a jungle with drums and all that. Okay, maybe drums. I don't know. We'll have to ask them. But within the context of our modern Western lifestyles, living tribally within those. I'll introduce Bill Kauth first, somebody who had a profound impact on my life because in 1984, he co-founded the New Warrior Training Adventure of the Mankind Project. Having taken the Mankind Weekend, that experience shifted my entire life trajectory and is at the root of my long-running men's group that focuses on emotional resiliency and preparing for the future. Bill is also author of A Circle of Men, which came out in 1992, I believe, and has literally launched thousands of support groups, many of which have become communities. He met our second guest, the multi-talented artist Zoe Allowen, at Burning Man. They married in 2008, and together they have been working with men and women building long-term, committed, non-residential communities. Zoe is a painter, a sculptor, a dancer, a songstress, mime, and storyteller, and her work in women's circles reclaims beauty and wisdom. Together, they co-wrote the book, We Need Each Other. Their new book is Time for Tribe, How to Build Your Personal Community, coming out in 2016. So welcome, Bill and Zoe.
Thank you, Chris. So good to be here.
Thank you, Chris. Wonderful introduction.
Well, yes. Well, my pleasure, of course. Set the stage for us. Why is a deeper sense of community needed at this time?
Either one of us could take that, but there's a profound increase in isolation and a almost tragic statistical decrease in friendship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm so glad you referenced Sebastian Junger's book, Tribe, which we've most of our friends have read it, and it's so relevant that the pain of not having connection and community is just profound. It's almost like everybody knows that, but nobody knows what to do about it, which is why we took on this task of actually building our own tribe. And it wasn't easy. It took us like 7 years to get the pieces right. And we now have a beautiful tribe of 20 men and women that meet every single week. We're profoundly intimate and connected with each other, and it's for sure looking like we'll be with each other for the rest of our lives.
Well, so let's go there. So this tribe of yours, where is it located?
Right here in Ashland, Oregon. And one of the major theses of our particular thing is that we don't live together. We each have our own, you know, homes or apartments. And we've got a devotion to meeting face-to-face every single week, which, you know from your men's group, you know, you meet that often and you just bond, you connect, and you stay connected. We also have a piece in our work and our training that we actually, you know, give ourselves the right to choose who we want to be with. So we rather carefully chose our tribe and the new people that come into it.
So choosing the tribe, Zoe, do you have anything to add to that?
Oh, I do. This is like a huge piece of learning as we kind of failed forward in our growth. There's been this classic tendency for people to just say, okay, we're going to build tribe. Okay, how about that, everybody? Does that sound like a good idea, bringing people together? And that's really the last time that group ever met. It took us a while to realize that people feel like, one, they've got to include everybody, and yet when that happened, like Bill started something called In My Village right around the time that I met him and heard about him, and it was a great experiment that lasted for, lasted a year, but it brought in people who weren't able to build the kind of trust that was needed. A lot of this is about finding the conditions to rebuild trust.
And what she's suggesting there is that one of the big learnings we had is that you can't call a group together and build a tribe. You actually have to start one person at a time, which requires a champion or a founder who then has the values and the structure ready to go and introduces and invites the next person, and then those two invite one more. It sounds slow, but it's actually not that slow, but it's very deliberate, and it's what works.
Well, so this sounds like something that would elude a lot of people, myself included, to just think, how could I go about starting something like this? It took you 7 years, you say, to get it to it, to where it is. It maybe seems easy now, but let's talk about the basic elements. Suppose somebody wanted their own tribe. You say they would get started that's where it starts, with that one person. They invite one other person, but obviously it's more than that. You can't just invite somebody over. Next thing you know, a tribe's going to spring out a whole cloth there. How do you really get started doing something like this? What's the intentions you have to set, and what are the practices?
Well, this was a big learning for us. We realized that somebody had to come up with some values and intentions and commitments. Commitments, there's that big word.
Ooh, huge.
And having just one other person join them. It was really when Bill wrote down the commitments and the values. And then he reached out to me and said, okay, I want you to fill out this piece of paper and agree to this. And I really saw that there was this transparency in there, speaking about your past and what you wanted to do with your life and your willingness to commit to something. And by actually citing that piece of paper, I was then able to give it back to him and say, well, would you fill out this testament of your intention? And then he did that.
Yeah.
And then we had something to thought out that we could offer to other people who we felt had a kindred resonance.
So there's a certain formality to it that actually works. It sounds a little squirrely, but it actually works to do that and to make those commitments very precisely. It rests in your soul somehow.
And one of the big commitments, especially for us here in Ashland, is making a commitment to place. Because we're in a society where people are saying, well, I've been here for like 3 or 4 years, and it's time for me to go. I want to go to Nova Scotia, or I think maybe I want to move to Hawaii for a while. And it's really important to have people be willing to say, no, I choose this bioregion.
It's our number one commitment. If you don't stay put, you'll never have tribe. And you know that, Chris, because I know that you very deliberately chose where you live and built your place there and everything. So.
Right, so this is one of the prime commitments for you then, is this commitment of saying, hey, I'm going to stick around, I'm going to show up, I presume, is another commitment. Is that the nature of them?
Yes, the show up, the promise to meet every week, promise to tell the truth, real, real basic stuff, but we actually require that people get it and speak it. We created a little training of about 15 hours that any new person has to go through this training so that they really get on the same page in terms of our values and intentions.
All right, I want to hear more about that. Zoe, can you, so let's say, we're going to get to the details in a second. I realize I probably skipped over something really important. I want to hear from you just what you get from the tribe and what the benefits are and how it's adding to your life.
Well, it's an expanding experience, and one that is kind of surpassing our expectations, really is surpassing. Because when you have people that commit to you and say, I am going to commit to these values, and I'm going to commit to this for a minimum a year, with the likelihood that they're going to recommit for the rest of their life. But when you have people that are have your back like that, and then they show up on a regular basis, like once a week, unless they're traveling, but on a regular basis, it changes the dynamic of those people who have said stepped up and said, yes, I'm in. And then you just, they're becoming like these mirrors for you, and you're being seen in a way that you've never been seen before, and it starts to fill you up in this remarkable ways, so that your work in the world increases just naturally because you feel so supported and held.
So it's kind of a soul filling in that sense of just really feeling loved. And I had an experience several months ago. Now Zoe and I were the founders, and after about a year, we had basically communicated everything we needed to communicate, and the tribe was perfectly functional on its own. So they de-rolled us. We asked them to de-roll us, take us out of the founder thing, and they had a great ceremony, and we just became regular Joes in the tribe. And about it took about a year, and I had this experience, this like this visceral experience of just feeling like I could literally fall back into the arms of my tribe, and I would be held and supported and loved forever. And it's just astonishing. I don't think I felt that since I was a little kid.
Now, I'm detecting a lot of resonance with sort of the piecemeal elements that I was getting from Sebastian Junger's book and interview with him, which was there are some core archetypal human patterns that really fulfill us when we get there. One I discovered in the Mankind Project, which is I really like sitting around with just men in the safety and the intimacy that comes from that, which is totally different from a mixed gender circumstance. And that's been very valuable to me. I didn't know it until I'd experienced it. I could have read 100 books on it, but as soon as I felt it, I was like, oh, this is something I was missing. Are you starting to find, Bill, that people are reporting that sort of level of experience with this, which is like, hey, I feel like I should have always been doing this, but didn't know it, and I'm glad I have it now? Or how's it showing up?
Incidentally, most of the men in our tribe are also in a men's group, and the women have their women's groups still. But what we're experiencing right now in terms of the depth of what's happening is that our tribe is 3 years old, a little over 3 years old, and we're kind of like a marriage. When you hit that 2-3 year point, shadows start showing up, stuff that we've been able to tuck away. But because we're so close and meet every week, the shadows are getting more and more obvious, and because we are committed to being with each other, there's a healing element that comes in so that we can actually invite, you know, each individual as their shadows begin to show to really get their arms around them, learn to love that part of them, and so the shadow fades away.
And part of our training involves a conflict resolution model that combines some of the warrior clearings with nonviolent communication. We kind of came up with our own hybrid of it, and we have that to lean on. We have that as a foundation. And we train people in that model, and that's part of what we do in the New Tribe training, is we train people all these different things that we found were really imperative as strategies to build trust.
Well, Zoe, I hear you. Yeah, you've got some of those tools, which are excellent. Is perhaps one of the commitments to process or work through the shadows when they come up? How does that part get brought into the tribe consciously?
One of our values and our commitments is to integrity, which, you know, simply put, means tell the truth, and that is tantamount to working your stuff when it comes up.
Yeah.
So when something comes up, we have the tools and skills to be able to say, okay, let's get the data, and now talk about how you feel about it. And then we've added something in there that goes beyond that, which is, what does this remind you of from your past? What does this remind you of? And, you know, just basically staying with the feelings and being able to speak and reflect about what pattern you can see this in your history of projections and coping mechanisms really enables people to come to some resolution.
Yeah, and in my own life, for anybody listening who hasn't had a lot of experience with inner processing like this, I have found in my life that the more I learn about myself and how I operate with my shadows, my projections, my inner parts, all of that, the more effective I am in the larger world, that the skills and tools that you're talking about, Zoe and Bill, which sound perhaps maybe somebody listening could think, oh, that sounds kind of peculiar and unique for a tribe. I want to just raise the idea that for me, I find that those skills and tools have broad application well outside of my private life and are really helpful to me. And I'm wondering if either or both of you have noticed that as well.
Oh, definitely. I mean, this is the thing that I didn't realize when we first started this is how growthful it is for us personally and collectively.
Yeah, we've been really surprised at that. It's a cauldron. We've created such a cauldron of growing and healing that it affects our lives dramatically. All of us. We can actually watch each other grow. It's astonishing and wonderful.
I mean, just yesterday we were in a meeting, and this one woman who's been part of tribe for 3 years, she was saying, I'm just beginning to realize how much I need connection and intimacy, and it's just going in deeper and deeper, and I'm still shocked by it, but I didn't really know. I thought I could just live with my partner, live with my husband, and not need anything else, but I've been needing this all my life, and I just didn't know it.
Oh, I totally understand that. Now, can we get a definition out? So the word intimacy has come up twice now. Bill, can you define that for us? What do you mean when you say intimacy?
Just sharing who we are as best as we can. And I need to make a distinction here. One of the things that's huge in our tribe is the gender safety. You know, Zoe and I both attended a very long, week-long training down in Harbin called Clearing the Air Between Men and Women, and we had to do a lot of work on healing our mother father wounds before we got in that. And in that container, we made the promise to not have sex with anybody in that container, it was half men, half women, forever. Not like 6 months, but forever. And it created so much safety that we actually had the experience of what it's like to be with the other gender when it's profoundly safe. No games, no bullshit, just really being open. And so we built that into our tribe. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the commitments also is for the gender safety is absolute transparency around anything that's sexual, mm-hmm. which, you know, at some level you don't expect to come up anyway. But so just to make the distinction, intimacy has nothing to do with sexuality. It has to do with really opening our hearts and sharing who we are as emotional, spiritual, loving beings.
And intimacy for me is my friend Gordon Clay's way of phrasing it, in to me I see. So that ability to deepen your capacity to look within yourself, and you can see yourself reflected in another. As you can look in and be seen, so can you have the capacity to see, and it grows.
Into me I see.
No, into me see.
All right. I see. Great. Now here's a question. So we've talked a little bit about some of the practices, the tools, and the rationale, and commitments that go into creating the tribe. Here's my question: how much has to be kind of undone first or unlearned before that building can begin? That is, how much of our cultural programming conspires to keep us isolated, superficial, maybe therefore lonely and unresilient? If I could coin a term,
First thing that we've discovered giving seminars all over the world on this is people's sense of worthiness or lack of worth. That has to be unlearned. It's the learning that we are worthy beyond our belief and gifted beyond our belief. I mean, that just has been astonishing to me. That kind of self-judgment, self-criticism.
Yeah, we found that it really, to do this at the level that we're talking requires having done some inner work, or being very courageous, because it's there's a lot of closeness. Folks are afraid of intimacy by and large, and they've been wounded, so they stay alone to keep themselves safe. We had a couple of terrific people that came into the tribe early on, and they honestly, for all of their skills and education, couldn't handle the level of intimacy, and they had to, bless them and I love them, but they had to leave. So we've watched that phenomenon and really paying attention to it.
We didn't ask them to leave, they chose to leave.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. So, but I'm sure a lot of people are going to self-select into that category and say, "Hey, maybe that's me." And so, what's the culture really doing to create that situation where we, at very deep down, I think everybody craves intimacy, unless every country Western song is wrong. You know, but at the same time, there's the skills for doing it are actually so atrophied as to be utterly missing from some people's lives. Like, they haven't had any exposure to it. This isn't a condemnation of who they are. It's that they've never been mentored. They've never been modeled. They've never been trained. Nobody's ever talked to them about it. It's just been something you don't do. How do we get there?
Wow, big one.
Well, I think step by step. There's ways in which we've brought people incrementally into this culture, into this environment where this is possible. I think Charles Eisenstein came out here several years ago and did a workshop. And following that, we decided to start something called gift circles, where we just gather together and we would speak our needs, something that we needed. And we'd take people, someone would take notes on it and send out the notes, and people would just respond to people's needs for simple things. Now, in the beginning, it was so hard for people to say something that they needed because they're more used to giving something. It's much more comfortable. But to be vulnerable, vulnerable and to say even one little thing, like one woman was just struggling with this, and she's a teacher, worldwide teacher. She kind of came up with, I need help learning how to put a signature page on an email. And three or four people said, I can help you with that. But that was big for her. And it's a genuine kind of asking. It's not like what happened in Fairfield, Iowa, with a group that started where somebody came to a group and he came with a list. And he says, I need your truck on Thursdays. And I need that. It's not that. It's a generous, vulnerable space of holding each other and listening for each other's needs and fulfilling it. Yeah. That weaving has gone on now for almost 7 years. We have had that group. And it's built a lot of connection.
Yeah, so it's always talking about, you know, something that's a little bit, actually a lot lighter than the tribe with very little commitment. But I'm sort of thinking you were asking about the alienation in our culture in general. And that's such a big question. That has to do with the wealth and the way the whole system is designed to keep us away from each other. It's actually designed that way. And I don't think deliberately, but in terms of the kind of pathological values that too many of us hold, it's almost like it was designed to keep us apart and alienated. So we're so swimming against the current in what we're doing. And the truth is, it's not easy. It's been very, very hard for us to do marketing up to now. This one in Asheville that's coming up, the new tribe training, is really filling up beautifully, but that's the first one. It feels really right. And we always interview people to make sure that they're settled, that they're home, that they're in their place, because our task is not to provide tribe for people. It's to teach people how to create their own tribe.
Yeah. Now, Bill, since you mentioned it, I'll pull it up here, which I see that October 6th through 9th in Asheville, North Carolina, you've got your first East Coast new tribe training, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So we'll have a link to that, and to get to your website, because I want people to follow that if they want to get training if they're on the East Coast. And then you have one on the West Coast as well coming up in December. Is that right?
Yep. We try to do at least one here a year.
Great. And so that one's December 1 through 4 in Ashland, Oregon. So one East Coast, one West Coast, and people can check those out. So I would love to direct people there to that. So, yeah, you know, in the seminars that I do, of course, I have a very self-selected sort of a crowd that comes to these things. But even these people who are very curious, very alert, really pushing at the edges of what's culturally acceptable in terms of thought and experimenting and how they're going to construct their lives. To a person, they talk about leading two lives, you know, the one they're actually living and the one they wish they were living, right? Mm-hmm. And that one they wish they were living is always in the future, and it's guarded by till the kids get out of high school, until they're out of college, until something, right? And but there's a sense, I feel, that people understand that if they had a different structure in their lives, they'd be happier. They've placed that structure on reforming their lives at some point in the future. I'm interested, Zoe, you first. How is it that this tribal thing you come up with is helping people recreate a new structure with the lives they already have?
Well, first of all, it's such a different success possibility because we're living in our own homes and we're not talking about buying land
mm-hmm.
and or living on somebody's land that has a lot of money and owns land. I mean, there's so, it just reduces all that complexity. Or trying to start a co-housing community, which can take 30 years of meeting sometimes. I mean, I'm exaggerating, maybe 15.
But it'll feel like 30.
Yes. And it's that, wow, you can do this by having the intent to meet in your own home. And it builds the foundation by being able to do that. We also make agreements that, our children are first priority. So blood family, if our children's needs are, we've got to meet, do something with them, that comes first. And that we support each other's children. Like in the first years of Tribe, I went to a football game because one of the women and families in Tribe, their kid was a football player, and I went to baseball games. And this is worth them. I don't like football or baseball. So it's like making this workable. It becomes, it's not that hard.
Mm-hmm.
And it's you can fit it in to our world. You don't have to wait until you're a householder. Done with being a householder.
I've studied all the research, or a heck of a lot of research on this, and it's the question that people have been asking for years. What is it that you most want in your life? And everywhere in the world, they always say love, family, and community. And in America, what do people go for? Money. Instead of what they really want. So we're actually just offering, an opportunity for people to get what they really, truly want. And just as you suggested, people always have to put it off. It's complicated. It's still kind of a mystery to me. But that is what's, what you've observed in your people is just painfully accurate.
Well, I think there's at some point two things. One, we realized that we could live the good life now.
Yeah. Oh, that's good.
With just simple things, great food, great friends.
Yeah, when you've got a loving community, you don't need a heck of a lot. Honestly, don't.
Yeah, there's mm-hmm. a tremendous amount of support that comes from just the natural exchange of resources. And it just goes on and on.
Well, let's put help me understand, paint the picture here. Your last get together, if you can, as long as you're not potentially violating any privacy issues or permissions that you haven't sought out and gotten yet. Tell us about your last meeting.
Can I tell you about the last two meetings?
Okay, let's do
that
because they were stunning.
Okay, the last meeting, no, the one two meetings ago. We were excited to look at an interview with Thomas Hubel. Do you know Thomas Hubel's work?
Only because I clicked on his link through your website today. And
right.
I really liked what I heard.
Yeah, and because one of the practices that we have done for the last 3 years is we stand up, look at each other, and we look at each other's eyes and say, I'm here to be seen. And they say, I see you. Or they say, I see you. And the other person says, I'm here to be seen. And then they reverse it. And it's a deep experience.
And the key to it is that you drop deep into your heart and really, really feel that other person with love and then say, I see you.
So we had people watch the Thomas Hubel talk, which was talking about what his experience traveling around the world was the greatest longing in people to be seen. And how in this culture, most of us have not been seen by our family of choice.
So we
spent the time deeply dropping in what people's feelings were one by one and their experiences of doing this I see you exercise and what it's been like for them.
Each of us went to each other person in the tribe.
Mm-hmm. It
took about 15-20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But we went around and also did a check-in around it, which was
interesting. People had experienced such, such connection. And Zoe and I experienced being buzzed, like falling in love, buzzed for like hours after it that day.
Hmm.
I mean, here we've been doing this practice for 3 years, but we deepened it that day.
Yeah, that's a piece of our tribe training, too. We do a lot of intimacy training in the tribe training so that people can take that back and do that with their friends. And
part of what we did that was in the check-in, of going around and check-in being everybody has 2 minutes. We have to time it so everybody has got enough time to be heard. everybody speaking about what that experience had been like that over the last several years, and it gave people an opportunity to actually speak about what they didn't like about it.
Hmm.
And that is part of what we enable and hold space for, is people speaking whatever is up for them. That makes it such a much more authentic experience. So then last week, which was just a few nights ago, we've been, people in our tribe have agreed upon these values. And at some point, two people from the tribe said, we'd like to revisit the values now that we're all full members and we were promised that we were going to do that. So who would hear we like a small group that's going to review these and start examining them? So Bill and I have been a part of that group, and we've been meeting for a couple of weeks, and we came to this one value that we had, which was celebration of relationship with divine presence or with spirit, and people had issues with that. So we, in our meeting, the facilitators distributed pieces of paper where we could write down what, whether you wanted to reword it, whether you wanted to toss it, what your feelings were. Then we separated into small groups in threes, and people talked about it. Then they brought it back to the group, and then everybody shared about it. And wow, was it interesting.
Yeah, what it's doing is it's allowing shadows to come up again as people make the values their own so that they fit. It's, again, it's a, we're a fairly mature group at 3 years, so we can do that.
And it's not just shadows, but it's also their vulnerability.
Yeah.
And they're knowing that they can be heard, they can say whatever is true for them, and they'll still be accepted. And there's still a place for their voice.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's both a relieving and liberating moment when you realize that you can bring out what's truly inside of you and not only not be shot down for it, but possibly even find yourself in a much more vibrant and connected and alive sort of a position in life, because you're bringing your true self out. And I think that's part of the deeper calling that's working here, where I, you know, when I feel that angst that people are expressing, I might rephrase it and say, somebody might be telling me a little bit sideways, there's really big stuff going down in the world. And I know I'm either going to be a participant in making it a better world or I'm not. Right. So how do I get up and start playing? And I think this exercise you're talking about here, and Zoe, you got right to it, is that when people can be vulnerable and allow their deeper self to come out, they can clear through whatever that next layer is, so they can get deeper into themselves and get closer to whatever their authentic gifts are, which change all the time as we grow and things change.
Well put.
It really furthers resiliency and vitality. It makes us a much more resilient group, because we're not so structured and so tight that it's like a box. And if, as long as people know that it's fluid and they are have the strength to participate vitally, it's a much stronger field that is holding them and holding all of us, and very resilient and resourceful.
Yeah. And as we said, we were derolled a couple of years ago, and there's plenty of talent in our tribe, so a different individual or couple runs the tribe and brings something splendid in each week, and it rotates.
So you, somebody's taking lead for the weekly meeting, as it were?
Yeah.
Yep, and you go to different houses?
Yep.
And then we have somebody that takes notes at every meeting and sends them out. So we have what we call a trusty tribe tracker.
A trusty tribe.
Made that up ourselves.
You don't have to be funny and goofy, or else people don't want to do the job.
Well, no.
So we need an administrative assistant. And I go, no, we need a trusty tribe tracker.
All right. Hey, something floated by a while ago, and it's bothering me. I want to bring it back forward, and I'm reminded of a Charles Eisenstein quote that said, "You cannot just have community as an add-on to a monetized life. You have to actually need each other." So that's the quote, and I'm wondering, how does one go about creating actual need with each other?
Boy, that is the gazillion-dollar question. And, you know, somehow it feels viscerally like I need my tribe. That just is the way it is. And we have one of our values. One of our values actually states, we make a living together, and we don't mean money by living. Somehow we're finding our ways towards the answer to that question, Chris. And so there's a non-monetary caretaking that happens a lot between us as social beings. And it's like often, in fact, twice it happened in the meeting this last week, where somebody was really hurting and went to somebody else in the tribe for support, or in this case, tapping, one of those stress release techniques, and found some real healing. And we'd never charge for that. That's just what we do for each other, like family.
Mm-hmm. Zoe?
It's like many different situations. There was a woman in our group who needed therapy, and she didn't have the resources for therapy. So we, in this case, we pulled together money and found her a really good recommendation of a therapist, and we paid for 10 sessions of therapy. And then after she went through that, she was so grateful, and was able to get back on her feet and get a job, and she's been repaying back into this fund that even though nobody asked her to.
Yeah. So the name of our book is We Need Each Other, and that's purely from Charles Eisenstein, who we hold as a friend and a teacher. So I wish I had a nice, clean, clear, crisp, simple answer for you, but it's something I'm still wrestling with, is at what level do we truly, deeply need each other, which is true community, a true tribe?
Yeah, and that's the thing I think that Sebastian Junger found was that when you're over there in your unit, and potentially even if your life is at risk, that need is just writ large and completely obvious, right? And a gentleman I know said that he had a similar experience when he was actually caught out in the perfect storm, when I was relating this tribal thing to him. And he said, yeah, he was out on a fishing boat, not on the one that sank, obviously. He said, but if all eight of us on that ship hadn't been doing our jobs flawlessly, we'd have sunk.
Yeah.
And coming back from that, he said, if he comes back, he spent 2 decades fishing, but those are the 8 guys or 7 other people he would go to right away. They would look each other in the eye, and they would have a bond that couldn't be described or understood normally through other means.
Yep. I've got that experience, in the early days of the Mankind Project, doing the new warrior trainings, where unbelievable intense things would happen. So with like Rich Tosi and David Carr, I've got those kind of life bonded, almost military experiences that, bond us forever. And I think in our tribe, as the more and more as we play together and face the ferocity, literally, you face the ferocity of your shadows coming up, where we literally have the trust and the ability to get pretty loud with each other sometimes. That there's a bonding in that's, I think, visceral and permanent.
Well, we also have, when people have had medical emergencies.
Ooh, yeah.
Here, one that was very sudden, an open heart surgery was required immediately, and his wife was like 5 hours away at a workshop. We just jumped on it, and we had
went to the hospital together.
Some went to the hospital with her, and when he got back, when he went to the hospital, and she returned, and we formed a singing circle.
Mm-hmm.
And so the rest of us that could sat in this living room, and we sang for him all the time he was undergoing the open heart surgery. And we've done that for a couple of different people who have had medical emergencies, because that happens in our world and in our age group, certainly.
Yeah. And on a simpler level, we'll often meet somebody coming back from a dramatic trip, overseas or something, with half a dozen of them with signs and balloons. We just do that. We love each other, so it's easy.
Well,
now, there's been a lot of crisis where people have showed up. They've showed up for us in situations where we live in a home that we rent, and our renter, the one we rent from, is in our tribe. And he was going through a divorce, and he was going to have to sell the house, sell the clubhouse.
Yeah.
And, we put it out to tribe, and people said, okay, we're going to come over, and people who know finance and mortgage are going to come, and we're going to meet. And they were talking a language we didn't even know.
Yeah,
drill in our globe. What are they
talking about? But they knew what they were talking about, and they saved the day. They managed to make it easy for him to solve his problem.
And here we are still.
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. So
yeah.
I'm sure a lot of people are intrigued at this point, but I have to ask the obvious question, which is, so you want to start a tribe, you're giving it a go. What are your war stories here? What are the things to avoid? Any hazard stories or stumbling blocks or surprises that that you can share that might save somebody some time and trouble?
Well, I do have one.
I'm sure you have one.
Yeah.
And it just really came to my attention a few months ago, really clearly. And that is the reason for coming together. The glue that's going to work is not based on collapse. It's not based on survival.
Highly relevant, Chris.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, we're very aware in our household about the environment and possible extinction. And that has been a big push of Bill's is for a durable safety net.
Yep, it's in our commitments.
And yet, when we polled the members of our tribe about a year and a half ago, what is the most important need for you in being in community? They said it was intimacy and connection.
Mm-hmm.
And the that is the glue that creates the safety net.
Yeah.
Now, we had a tribe that formed in a local town. They did our training, and they put together something that was just based on the reason for this, the need for this is to create a safety net for times of collapse.
Yeah.
And it recently just fell apart.
It collapsed.
Yeah.
So this is really relevant to your work, Chris. There was a time where I went around the world talking about what's going on. I mean, I went around the country talking about what was going on, you know, build your lifeboat now, that kind of thing. And it was hard. It was hard on me, and I think it was hard on the people that came to listen. That's not what they really wanted. And everywhere I went, they wanted the mailing list because what I was doing was some just interpersonal stuff, and they were like, oh, my God, I can be closer to other people. Can I have the mailing list? That was my big clue that people want community. That's part of why I made the commitment to do this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I have found subsequently I put at least one line about, the building a new safety net because I know some people are paying attention to that. But I can honestly not remember one person that's come and signed on that said, I'm here to build a safety net. I don't know whether that's just so deep in shadow that nobody wants to say it, or whether it's just peripheral, or whether they're in denial, but that's been our experience, so.
I completely understand, and, I'm totally agnostic as to why somebody goes towards a route that I consider to be more resilient, right? If the neighbor plants a pear tree because he likes the blossoms in early June, I don't care, right? But I do care that the pear tree gets planted. So for me, it's whatever works is best. So I think I can hear both in that statement though. So for me, I can tell, here's my both and in this, it's not either I have a safety net or I'm living in a community where we're doing these other wonderful things. It's both true that the more I become intimate and connected and feeling that wonderful aliveness that I have in my community, the more resilient I become for my safety net is just like an automatic feature of that. It comes along for the ride, you know, but I think you're right. It's important to notice. I think the opposite of that isn't true. Building the safety net does not get you automatically or potentially at all the intimacy and the closeness that create the glue that provides that durability.
Yeah.
Yep. Your chapter 10, Emotional Capital, in your book actually handles that really nicely, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Thank
it's
you.
Whatever builds trust. I mean, that's the thing with the men in the fishing boat accident. Mm-hmm. Those men trusted each other. They were in a situation and they trusted each other.
Ooh.
So that was a forceful, a visceral experience of that. And we're doing that in a little bit, a longer process.
Yeah.
But we trust each other.
Yep.
Yep. I would recommend sailing into a big storm at some point if you really want, if you're in a hurry, you really want to goose the process.
Storm, let me tell you. We have been through some very big storms in this tribe.
Yeah.
And because we're committed,
We're not going away.
Yeah, we're not going away, which means that when stuff comes up, we have to wrestle with it. And that's our storms.
Yeah.
All right.
We're not
going
to give up.
Well, I'm so glad to hear that. And we're almost out of time here, so I want to make sure people have the tools they can find. There's the book, We Need Each Other. I see that on your website, which is timefortribe.com, timefortribe, one word, .com. And the next book, is that out or coming out soon?
No,
it's not completed yet.
You're an author, you know how long these things
I
take.
I know, I absolutely
know. And we've been busy, you know, just really getting these seminars up and running, the new workshops, so we haven't been writing much lately, so we'll have to roll it to 17.
All right, so, but you do have, and I wish I could make it, I will unfortunately be in a very... I'd be halfway around the world on October 7th. Otherwise, I would be very interested in coming down to Asheville, North Carolina for October 6th to 9th. And
welcome to Ashland, Chris.
That's a possibility. It actually is.
You enjoy this too.
That sounds wonderful. So I would love to see you again, and love to do the training, and love to, of course, continue the discussion and find out more about your amazing and very necessary, I think, cultural experiments, because let's be clear, the culture that we've built for ourselves is not working for too many people, and also it's not working for the longer sustainability. So we have to do new things, which means we've got to take risks, we got to try some stuff, got to make a few mistakes, got to learn, got to keep moving. So with that, is there any other thing I can direct people to help them stay current with what you're up to?
No, actually, go to our website and just get on our mailing list, and we'll just keep folks posted as to when our trainings come out and when the book comes out, and if we have any blog stuff. You know, my next actually marketing piece, which would be like a blog piece, is actually that question you asked about, like from Charles Eisenstein. What really are these deep needs that we meet? So anyway, my point is just stay with us. Get on our mailing list.
Fantastic. Well, Bill, Zoe, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Chris. This has been splendid and fun.